for coming, and thank you to Rabbi Milinchek, because it's due to his fill in the adjectives, all positive, perseverance, vision, openness, efforts, etc. So we are able to get together tonight, and what will please God be the first of a monthly get-together, and I'm going to be looking forward to sharing this platform with our new Rosh Chabura, Rabbi Aaron Kraft. So you will be seeing more of us, if you keep coming, than maybe you had before. He is the newest member of our kolol. Okay. A new position was created this year, and his name is Rabbi Aaron Kraft. It's called the Rosh Chabura. So what I wanted to discuss tonight is a perspective in Hashkafa, in Machshava, in a emotional / intellectual appreciation of an aspect of Rosh Hashanah, Habal Lein Latova. So it's going to focus specifically on the shofar, but hopefully it'll give us a greater appreciation of the whole experience that we have on Rosh Hashanah. So if I were to ask you what the shofar symbolizes, what does it remind us of?
Akeda.
So one would be the Akeda. What else? Har Sinai is another one.
Tshuva,
third one. So far, all right answers.
Melech,
Amlich Melech. Malchios. So you all are picking up on individual pieces of what's on the first page of your source packet, which is, I have this in my Machzor at home, but also a lot of Machzorim have it. This happens to be from the Machzor Rabbah. They summarize, at least in my Machzor, they print this right before the Tekiyos. Has anybody ever seen this in the Machzor? They have...
Yes, I do.
You've seen it?
There's Yisrael Bikur Machzor, a little one at the bottom they have.
So they list you from Rav Sadia Gaon. Rav Sadia Gaon is from the great Gaon Bavel. Mm-hmm. So you're talking over 1,200 years old, this tradition from Rav Sadia Gaon. What are the kavanas of the shofar? So he lists 10 kavanas. And so some people, at least I have it in my Machzor, some of you have it in your Machzor, before they blow the tekiyos, they have this printed in the Machzor, so you can contemplate it, you think about it. So someone mentioned the first one, well, the first one nobody mentioned. Someone mentioned Har Sinai, that is number 3 on the Rasag list. Someone mentioned Tshuva, so that's number 7, let's say, or number 8. Number 7 is to be broken, the sound of the broken sound of the shofar gives us a sense of submission. But number 8 is we should have the din, the Yom HaDin, that reminds us of the ultimate Yom HaDin that will come at the end of time. That has the connotation of the sound of a shofar. So you have here 10 different aspects. It includes, obviously, the Akedah, which is... Maimon Har Sinai was number 3. Where was the Akedah?
6.
Thank you. And there are several others. So this is a very nice thing, just in case you don't walk away with anything from this year. If you don't happen to have this in your machzor, it's a good thing to take home and have, and keep it in your machzor on Rosh Hashanah. And when they blow the shofar, obviously the point is to contemplate some of these aspects. But what I'd like to suggest this evening is that there is another dimension to Tekiyah Shofar that's not mentioned in the comments of Rav Sadia Gaon, but perhaps we can suggest it, and then we'll see if it really fits. And that is that perhaps the Jewish symbol of freedom is in the shofar.
The Yovel.
Ah, it's from Yovel. Well, what does Yovel have anything to do with Rosh Hashanah?
Well, it's war, also war. Shofar is also war.
Okay, so that's...
So, you know, I mean...
So, he mentions a little bit about the pachad of Tekiyah Shofar. But in terms of freedom, so you're 100% right that we can look to the model of Yovel to get us started. Because the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah raises the question, does it anywhere in the Chumash say that you blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah?
Zichron Trua.
Okay, it says there's a Zichron Trua.
Yeah.
But it doesn't say it's a shofar.
No.
It says it's a Trua.
Right.
What makes it Trua?
A
shofar makes it. I'll call it shofar. I'll call it shofarot.
The
trumpets
too.
The din is, the Mishnah tells us, that in different times of the Beis HaMikdash, they used different kind of instruments. They used to have, actually, they had two instruments side by side. They had chatzotzros and shofros, the Mishnah says in Tanis. Sometimes they would have a longer blast of the shofar, sometimes they have a longer blast of the trumpet, depending on what the purpose of the tekiahs were. But it says, Zichron Trua, what else does it say? Yom Trua Yelachem, right? That's it. Doesn't tell you use the shofar. Maybe use a kazoo. How do you know they use the shofar? So the Gemara has a brisa. A brisa means it's a Tannaitic source dating back the same time as the Mishnah, but not appearing in the Mishnah. It's a parallel text. It appears in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, page 2. The Gemara tells us, Tana Rabbanan. The rabbis learn means in a brisa. Minayin shebe shofar. How do you know that what you're supposed to blow to create the trua sound, which we'll talk about later, is specifically from a shofar? Maybe it's from something else. Talmud lomar v'ha'avarta shofar trua. So there are Bali Kriya in this room who are familiar with this pasuk. V'ha'avarta shofar trua b'chodesh hazeh. When is that said in the context of? Not of Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara quotes a pasuk not in Rosh Hashanah. It's the context of Yovel, the Jubilee year. And says the Gemara, Ein li ela b'Yovel. Fine, you're going to tell me that's true for Yovel, but Rosh Hashanah minayin. How do you know that's true for Rosh Hashanah? Talmud lomar, b'chodesh hashvi'i. In the seventh month. What's the seventh month?
Tishrei.
Says the Gemara, She'ein talmud lomar b'chodesh hashvi'i. Obviously, it's in this chodesh hashvi'i. We know that tekiah shofar shel Yovel took place on Yom Kippur. So what is it to teach you? Ma talmud lomar, b'chodesh hashvi'i. The seventh month. Sheyukol truos shel chodesh shvi zekoseh. So the din is, the Gemara learns out through this, I would say, this rabbinic tool. It's a hint that this is supposed to collect all the truas, meaning for Rosh Hashanah and for Yom Kippur of Yovel. They're all supposed to be the same. So just like Yom Kippur of Yovel, the pasuk says you should use a shofar. So true, we obviously know that you're supposed to use a shofar on Rosh Hashanah. That's how the Gemara teaches it. If anybody asks you, somebody stops you on the train or on the L, how do you know you're supposed to use the shofar? It doesn't say it in the Bible. So you say it says in the Gemara.
And you told me that.
Good. They won't buy that answer.
No.
No, they won't. You have to tell them it's a Gemara, and the Gemara has a specific limud, okay, a mechanism of learning Rosh Hashanah from Yovel. And that's not just the fact that we use the shofar. The whole tzura, the whole structure of the tekiahs are connected to Yovel. Now, how do we know that this is true for Yovel? So that's why I just put you on source number 3, the Psukim from Vayikra, where it describes at the end of the 7-year cycles, the seven cycles of 7 years, you have the 49th year, which is the last year, and then the 50th is the Shemitah. And that's where it says the Pasuk test, the Pasuk we just quoted, V'ha'avarta shofar tura b'chodesh ha'shvi'i be'asar l'chodesh. In the seventh month, on the 10th day, you ha'avarta, how would you translate ha'avarta? You should pass it out, let it sound out. And that's the sanctity of the Shnas HaShemitah, of the Shnas HaYovel. The Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, a little bit earlier, points out what we said, that there is a connection between the shofar shel Yovel and the shofar shel Rosh Hashanah, inasmuch as that's true also for the sounds and for the blessings. You're going to find the same thing. If you were to go into back in the day when they observed Yovel, you'd hear the same kind of sounds. That's the Mishnah says in Source 4. First of all, it tells you the difference in the style of the shofar, which is not for today, but obviously there's a little bit of a different experience when you're experiencing Rosh Hashanah, that's one kind of day, and Yom Kippur of Yovel, different kind of day, so there's a different, whether the shofar is supposed to be bent, how are we supposed to be on Rosh Hashanah, are we supposed to be bent over, are we supposed to be straight, this is a whole other discussion for a different time, but the key is, the third to last line in this Mishnah, Shoveh HaYovel L'Rosh Hashanah L'Tzkiyah V'L'Brachos. So the sounds and the blessings are the same for Rosh Hashanah and for the Tekiahs of Yovel. And this is codified in the Rambam, which is the last source on the page. Mitzvah saseh shel Torah l'shmoa truas ha-shofar b'Rosh Hashanah shenemar yom trua yelachem. That's the Makar, the Rambam. This is the first Rambam. Remember, the Rambam lived in the 12th century. He codified, was the first taxonomist, so to speak, the first codifier of Jewish law in an organized fashion, the way that we know it. All right, one bit of trivia. I can't help myself. I always do this. When did the Rambam live? The easiest way to remember is he lived less than a half hour. He was born in 1135 and he died at 1204. That's the easiest way to remember how long the Rambam lived. The Rambam was born in Cordova in Spain. And then his family moved to Fez in Morocco, but the bulk of his life he spent in Egypt. And that's where he wrote the 14 books of the Yad HaZaka, also called the Mishneh Torah. So here in the beginning, the first halacha in Hilchos Shofar, the Rambam tells you it's a mitzvah to blow the shofar. V'shofar shetoken bo bein b'Rosh Hashanah bein b'Yovel. The Rambam paskins that it actually has to be the same shofar. Hu keren hakvasim hakafuf. You're supposed to take a sheep's horn and it's supposed to be bent.
But they say in the Torah, it says, "Feed me to pez zahav."
So this is a discussion, the Gemara, exactly what are the parameters. That's a shaila about the Gemara has a discussion about where you can put gold on the shofar, but that's more of a minig, it's not a halacha. And the Rambam is paskening, not like some of the opinions that are cited here, that differentiate between the style of the shofar for Rosh Hashanah and for Yovel. The point is that we could see from these three stages that the shofar of Rosh Hashanah and the shofar of Yovel have something to do with each other. What is accomplished by the Tkiah Shofar of Yovel? What's the theme? Oh, what happens specifically on Yom Kippur of Yovel? Bingo. Shiluach Avodim.
Yeah.
And the Gemara actually has a discussion. What if you didn't have a shofar? Do the slaves even go free without a shofar? So the din is that on Yom Kippur of Yovel, there's Shiluach Avadim, the slaves go free, and the land, right? The land goes free, so to speak, from the current holders, and it returns back to the original landholders.
Why doesn't the Rambam use the same pasuk as the Gemara? I mean, because Rosh Hashanah, he wanted to use Yom Teruah.
So the Rambam uses the pasuk Yom Teruah to tell you that you're supposed to have the sound. The fact that the sound has to come from the shofar, that the Rambam tells you in the second stage. So first he just tells you that it's a day of hearing that sound.
We're talking about a shofar of a Ya'el. Isn't it supposed to be a shofar of an Ayal?
Or so, are they the same? So they're not the same, I believe. No. A Ya'el is a goat, an Ayal is a ram, and the Rambam Paskin is supposed to be of a kevis, of a sheep.
Yeah, well, no. Then Ayal would be a male sheep, so I think.
It would be a grown sheep.
A grown sheep.
As opposed to a goat.
So
okay.
It has to be from what?
So there's the Rambam Paskins, the Rambam rules, like the one opinion that says that in both cases it's from a sheep, or a grown sheep is a ram. Anyway, that's not so important for what I want to focus on right now. The greater focus is, if this is really true, that from a legal standpoint, the shofar of Rosh Hashanah and the shofar of Yovel are related to each other, so one would expect that from a metaphysical, from a machshava standpoint, they should be related to each other also. So perhaps I would have said that just like you can imagine, if you were living in the time of the Beis Hamikdash and somebody was an Eved Ivri, so he's been an Eved Ivri, who knows how long he's been an Eved Ivri, what's he waiting to hear?
Shofar.
The call of the shofar on Yom Kippur, because that means his life goes back to what it was once, a life of independence. So that sound, that symbol of freedom, so that should be transferred to our understanding of Rosh Hashanah. The problem is that it's not really what we think about on Rosh Hashanah. We don't feel emancipated, adraba. We feel a sense of intensity. Most people, when you ask them to associate what a shofar have in terms of their affect, you know, what do they feel when they're thinking about the shofar, when they're hearing the shofar? They're feeling a sense of tension, maybe even anxiety. The call, ultimately, the Rambam says, is for tshuva. And this is the Rambam articulates, not in Hilchos Shofar, actually in Hilchos Tshuva on the next page. If you look at the Rambam, this third parak of Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam says, Afal pishit kia shofar b'Rosh Hashanah gzeres hakasuv. Even though, why do I blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah? It's gzeres hakasuv, because the Ribbono Shel Olam told me. There's no rationale that I could come up with that I would have figured out on my own. That's what the pasuk says. Nonetheless, Remez Yeshba, there is a hint. Klomar, as if to say, I'm on the first super wide line in the Rambam on source 6. Uru, uru, yeshena mishinaschem. Wake up, sleepy ones, from your slumber. Vehakitsu nirdamim mitardimaschem. And wake up, you, the slumbering ones from your doldrums. Vechipsu b'maaseichem. And look into your deeds, v'chizru b'tshuva, and return in tshuva, v'zichru borachem, and return and think about your maker, eilu ha'shochem es ha'emes b'havli asman, this is the time to wake up. So it certainly doesn't have this like very emancipating feeling. It's more like a feeling of intensity. So why is it that we associate the shofar of Rosh Hashanah with the shofar Shel Yovel when the shofar Shel Rosh Hashanah has more of a, I don't want to use a negative terminology, you feel shackled. You feel shackled to your past, to the life that you've had. You don't feel emancipated at all. And perhaps even a higher level, now this is a good thing, but we feel the Ol Malchus Shemayim. You feel the dominion of the Ribbono Shelom, the master of the universe. So how do we square that away? So I think perhaps to examine this, we need to go back, all the way to the beginning of why Rosh Hashanah is on Rosh Hashanah. So we say in one of the piyutim that's probably very well known in this room, in the Musaf Chazar Sashatz, we say this little piyut, some shuls they sing it, they say, Hayom Haras Olam. What does that mean, Hayom Haras Olam?
The world was born, was created, conceived.
Okay, you said two different words.
Yeah.
Born. Yes.
Well, man was...
One second, you're throwing a whole cholent in here. Okay. Was the world born or conceived today?
Created.
Right, big difference. Yeah. So the answer is, it was born, but sometimes in Tanakh, like there's a pasuk in Iyov, where it used the word hara to mean born. Okay. So hayom haras olam means today, haras with a suf, not with a... Some people who have Sfaradit, it becomes a confusion for them. Hayom haras olam with a tuf means today is the birthday of the world. And that is, Rav Sadia going on his list, one of the reasons that we blow the shofar. It's a birthday party. You know, you have the cuckoo. You know, the people do that, especially for kids. It's fun. So Rosh Hashanah is the birthday of the world. Is it really the birthday of the world? No. Why not?
It's the birthday of man.
Ah, so that's what the Ran points out in the back of his commentary on Rosh Hashanah. You know, if you open up a classic Vilna edition of the Shas, you have in the back the small halacha compendium of Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi called the Rif. So the Rif was a precursor. He lived before the Rambam. The Rif lived, he was born in Morocco. He moved to Spain. The Rif wrote essentially a summary, a halachic summary of all the passages in the Talmud that are relevant practically. So on that, there is a super commentary called the Ran, Rabbeinu Nisim ben Ruvain. So Rabbeinu Nisim, he lived in the 14th century, and he has a discussion about exactly this issue, because the Mishnah says in Rosh Hashanah that on Rosh Hashanah, kol boy olam over lefanav kibnei maron. What passage in the davening of Rosh Hashanah invokes this Mishnah?
In the Tana Tokef.
Exactly. We speak about the imagery as if we were going before the Ribbono Shel Olam, as if he was a shepherd, and we are the sheep. And we go kibnei maron. So why do we go kibnei maron? So he quotes an old medrash that takes sides in a machlokas. The machlokas appears in Rosh Hashanah. When was the world created? Rabbi Yeshua says, B'nisan nivra ha'olam. It was created in Nisan. And Rabbi Lezer says, not true, B'tishrei nivra ha'olam. Now this has ramifications for several things in the Gemara, but it certainly has ramifications for us, because we say, Hayom haras olam. Mm-hmm. Which means that we're assuming, which is a good question why we assume this, but we assume that we're going to follow Rabbi Eliezer, that the world was created in Tishrei. Although we'll see, maybe there's a deeper level of why that is. But the world was created in Tishrei. Well, on what day was the world created? If now we say that we're going to be starting the calendar in Tishrei, when was the world created?
First day.
Right? Aleph Tishrei, that you would think. Yeah. But that's what he points out. The Ram points that's not true. 25th, exactly, because that's what the Ram points out. Now look at this. I just gave you the whole thing in case you want to review it later or share it with friends and enemies. It's a tremendous Ran based on a Medrash. And I'm just, what's that? The Ran is now working off a Psikta. A Psikta is a Midrashic text, let's say it's parallel to the time of the Talmud. D'Tanya, we learned it in the Brisa of Gemara. I put in the little bracket. Rabbi Lezer, Omer, Rabbi Lezer says, Tishrei Nivra Olam. What does it mean the world was created in Tishrei? Al Gemar Briyaso. Ko'amrinon. The conclusion of the creation. De Adam Harishon of Adam Harishon. Meaning, you're right, the world was created, but the world started being created before. It was only concluded, the final creation was on the sixth day,
when
man was created. Shabon Nigmar Ha'olam, from that day the world was finished. Nivra b'yom shishi dahainu b'echad b'tishrei. So the Ran, quoting this psikta, explains to us that the first day of Tishrei is not actually the birthday of the world. It says, "Vayir vayvoka yom echad." That was in Elul. This coming week was the birthday of the world. That Aleph Tishrei is the birthday of Adam Rishon. Then he goes on to talk about exactly what happened to Adam Rishon that day. He gives you the famous story of the Chet Eitz Hadas, and he goes through the whole schedule of the day. So when we say Hayom Haras Olam, it means today is the beginning of the world as we know it, as human beings. So Adam Rishon was created on this day. So maybe that's a clue. Maybe the fact that we are commemorating the birthday of humankind will give us some insight into what the nature of the day is. So to do that, we need to examine how Adam Rishon was created. So if you look on the next page...
Why do you use the word Halak?
What then?
Why do you use the word Halak?
Why is that?
It's born to indicate that it was the birthday of man.
Oh, okay, very good. So perhaps that's why he uses the word Haras, to say that we were born on that day. So... here's the thing. Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that it's not so simple to talk about the Bria of Adam Rishon, because it sounds like he was born twice. There's two stories.
How do you get born twice?
That's what I was asking. The Rav asked the same question. How can you be created twice?
You may be born and then created as a different type of a person.
So maybe we're going to go in that direction. Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, and we could spend many, many hours analyzing this particular piece in depth. Rav pointed out that there are two creation stories, and this is known to some of you in this room who pay attention. There is Perek Aleph in Bereishis, where Adam Rishon is created, and then there's Perek Beis, where he's created all over again.
Repeats the story.
Different story.
So that's the point. So if you look very carefully, we will find that there are quite a few differences between what we might call Adam Rishon number one and Adam Rishon number two. As the Rav says, Adam 1 and Adam 2. The distinction can be drawn by looking at the psukim themselves. Vayomer Elokim, I'm in source 9, but on the right-hand side, where I have the Roman numeral 1. Vayomer Elokim, Nase Adam Bitzalmenu Kidmusenu. And the Lord said, let us make man in our image, in our form. Vayirdu Bidgas Hayom V'ov HaShemayim, Uvabehemo v'chol ha'aretz v'chol ha'remes ha'remes alo aretz. Vayivra Elokim es ha'adam b'tzalmo. And the Lord created the man in his image. B'tzalem Elokim bara oso. He created him in the image of the Lord. Zachar unikeva, male and female bara osam. He created them. Short story, we have people. Same story, second time around. Ela told us ha'shamayim ha'aretz behi bar'am. B'yom asos Hashem Elokim Eretz V'Shamayim. On the day that God, the Lord, created the earth and the heavens. And then it describes that there wasn't anything growing because there was no people to work the land. And there was some mist, Pasuk Zayin, Vayitzer, and he shaped Hashem Elokim, God, the Lord. Es ha'adam ofer minu adama, Vayipach ba'apov nishmas chayim. He fashioned him from earth, and he blew into his nostrils a living spirit, Vayihi ha'adam lenefesh chaya. And it was that the person became a living soul. So what are some of the differences between the first story and the second story? Okay, that's one. The first time when it describes the creation of Adam Arishon, it describes him as male and female.
Simultaneously,
but also using that anatomic description, as opposed to... Right. I only gave you a little bit of it, but this is when the Torah describes much longer how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Chava. That's the next section. He caused Adam to fall asleep, he took a rib, etc. So here we're getting a much longer version. So far, for sure, a much longer version of the story of the creation, because you're going to get the whole development of Chava. But the difference between Zachar and Nekeva and Adam is certainly there. Here, this case, They're not getting any names. It's just Zachar and Nekeva. And in the second story, they're going to get names. He's going to be called Adam. She's going to be called later, much later, but she's going to be called Chava. She is Eim Kol Chai. What else?
Chelam Adam. We've been talking about it.
Okay.
The image, the other one doesn't mention it.
So in the first case, it only mentions the contours of Adam. Now, what the contours mean is a very big debate. What it means to be B'tumus and B'tzelem. Obviously, the Rabbanu Shalom ain't lo goof. He doesn't have any body. We don't believe in a corporeal God. So you have to understand what that means. But the second time, it describes something else. It describes taking a clod of earth and blowing a nishmas chayim into it.
Life.
A living spirit.
Isn't there a difference also with bara and v'yitzar?
Okay, v'yitzar has the connotation of creativity.
Yeah, creativity.
Bria is the connotation of just
make
spontaneous.
I don't know about spontaneous,
no, I mean
but
to make something. I don't know.
It's a
process. The creation in the sense that it's similar to perhaps the creation of everything else that was created.
To create some out of dirt.
So why is it that it only says Vayitzer the second time and not the first time? It should have said
that
Vayitzer.
That was the creative part. Was
right,
the dirt.
Good. It was all from
the other one.
Good.
There was no creativity.
Hashem Elohim the second.
Yeah. So what is that? What does that mean? What does that mean? What's that?
That's a good question.
So that's a good question, but maybe this is going to unlock some of the story.
Hashem is involved
in people. He thought Midas Hadin that would create man. So what is Midas Hadin? What is Midas Hadin? What does it have to do with anything? So if you notice, in the first passage, and if you open up a Chumash, you will find that there is one reference, one way to relate to Hashem that appears all the way through Perek Aleph. And this is important because the name of God has a significant meaning to us. I'll tell you what I mean. You can have one person that has multiple ways of being called. So here, some people call me Reuven, some people call me son, some people call me different times in my life coach, or commish, when I was the sports commissioner, way back when. Some people call me dad, but I'm only
what
one person.
What does your wife call you?
So it depends. Depends on the day. Depends where we're holding. Let's just, on a good day, it's good. Let's just say.
It's up to you to ask the question.
Sorry. Of course. You call me honey.
Okay. That's being recorded. You know, this is anonymous. You can have one being that has multiple different ways of being related to. And what is the difference between the names, between the appellations? It's the function, exactly. For kids on the baseball team, so they'll call me coach. But my children at home, they'll call me daddy. I'm the same person, but I'm playing a different role. I'm wearing a different hat, so to speak. When the Ribbono Shel Olam relates to the world, he wears different hats. Sometimes we call him Avinu. Sometimes we call him Malkeinu. Sometimes he's our spouse. Different kinds of ways of relating to him. There's only one Borei Olam. There's only one Master of the Universe. But we have different ways of relating to him. There was an Alter Yid. There was someone in Chicago who told me he was related to him, who a European Jew who used to daven in our shtibel. The Shem should have an aliyah. His name is Rabbi Fisher. So he used to sit in the Mizrach Vant. He was, I think, a retired Rav. And we would go to Duchen as kids. He would tell us jokes on the Mizrach Vant before we were Duchen. Yiddish jokes. So I still remember one of the jokes he asked us was, 8 years old, how many Avinu Malkeinus are there? So, you know, we start counting in the city. He looks and he says, just one. So we relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam in different ways, but there's only one Ribbono Shel Olam. So the word Elohim has a specific connotation. The word El means power, capacity. When we say Elohim, we means Baal HaYecholas, the one who has the ability, the strength. As opposed to the Shem Havaya, Yud and then Hey and then Vav and then Hey, that has a different meaning. It means Haya Hovaviyah. It means that he's transcendent. The strength of God is manifest in this world. Transcendence means it's something otherworldly. The natural world, the beginning of Sefer Bereishis, is created with the word Elohim. Elohim means the strength of the physical world. You ever see two fish in a fish tank? Right? Mm-hmm. You take two little fish in a fish tank and you put a shark in there.
Oh boy.
So what's going to happen?
They're gone.
But wait a second. What about if these little fishalach, they're nice, they have good midas, they don't cry, they don't give anybody a hard time, they keep the tank clean. So we're going to say to the shark, say, Rachmanis on us. We've been the fish for this balabas for 25 years. What, are you going to eat us now for dinner? So it doesn't work like that. In the world of nature, the big fish eat the little fish. There's no such thing as Rachmanis. It's just, it is. That's the nature of Teva. The nature of the world is to be, as Hobbes said, nasty, brutish, and short. You don't have to be such a big philosopher to talk about the state of nature. Because if you're living in wild abandon, so obviously the small are eaten by the big. That's the state of nature. When the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world the first time, the first whole chapter is creating the natural world. Elohim. So just like there are flowers, and when somebody eats a flower, it dies. And then there are animals. So the bigger animals, the lions, eat the zebras. And if it's a good day for the zebra, it'll get away. And then there are people. So people are, in a certain sense, zebras on 2 feet. In a certain sense, we're creatures like every other natural creature. It's Bereishis, Perek Aleph. Vayivra, we talk about Bria Sa'olam, we talk about Bria Sa'adam. We're like every other natural creature.
Except the brain.
Oh, that is something different. Vayipach ba'apov nishmas chayim. What is a neshama? Neshama is something that's from a different realm. From the ha-yehovah v'yeh, from the transcendent. It's not a this-worldly. It's an otherworldly. They, deep down, each one of us doesn't belong to this world. We're somewhere else. We're of a different substance. That world of transcendence, in that world, the big fish don't always eat the little fish. You know, we look around the world. There's some little fish who do quite remarkable things. And they don't get eaten up by the big fish. Sometimes they do, but there's a great equalizer. Ha-Yehovah V'yeh, Hashem Echad. That ultimately equalizes everything. It's merit-based. It's not might is right. This idea that there's more than just the physical, the big eating the small, that's the concept of Shem Havaya, of Rachmanus. That's Rachmim. Because Rachmim says, you're right. Maybe today the big fish should eat the small fish. Maybe today I did an Aveira and I deserve a lightning bolt to come and zap me down. Because I rebelled against my creator. But Rachmanus says there's something else than just the strict din. And that's the Rashi you alluded to, that the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to set the baseline of the world on din. So there's a spiritual dimension to that, and then there's a physical dimension. There's a natural world. We're going to be in the world which has nature. If a person goes bungee jumping off of a side of a cliff, and they forget their bungee cord, so then...
It's over.
That's it. Done and done. Lo aleinu. That's not... Rachman is not going to help you. There is an element of midas hadin. And then you can even discuss even longer, a longer discussion of Chaim Yaakov Goldwich, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the founding Rashiv of Keren B'Yavne. He has a long essay where he talks about, sometimes we find in Chazal, very, very strict judgment on some of the greatest tzaddikim, like Rabbi Akiva. So Rashiv Zatzal has a whole essay where he points out that in a certain sense, Rabbi Akiva takes the world back to that original state of din. He was able to withstand the withering scrutiny of God to the level of din. Somebody should be able to take din over the history of humanity. Somebody is olam din. It's Rabbi Akiva, it's Moshe Rabbeinu, these incredible spiritual giants. Anyway, that's a longer discussion, not for now. But the first description of Adam is just like all the other animals, and that's why it's called Zachar and Nekeva. Zachar and Nekeva are anatomical descriptions. Every animal has, you have Zachar and you have Nekeva. That's perhaps why we could even add, it's not significant in the first story how they became Zachar and Nekeva. Because just like you have Zachar and Nekeva of every kind of animal, so they mate, and then they reproduce. So here, on the first side of it, Zachar and Nekeva on the right side is Zachar and Nekeva, they just need to reproduce, finished. What's the next way of creating Adam? Not as a natural beast, as a human being that's endowed with the spirit of God. Oh, in that case, how do you create Chava? She comes from Adam Arishon. So it's not just Stam, two different genders that mate. There's a certain connection that's brought from within that they can create this monogamous relationship. They can create what will ultimately become marriage because they can reconnect to each other. But it's not like animals that they just come and go. But that's only a function of the fact that we are spiritual beings. We have an emotional aspect to ourselves. We have a spirit. We have very deep-rooted neshama that's within us. So perhaps based on this, we can understand everything. Because we see now that Rosh Hashanah is the anniversary of the creation of Adam Rishon. But it's actually two different beginnings. It's the beginning of Adam Rishon as a biological creation. It's also the beginning of Adam Rishon as a spiritual being. Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim. So the Unkelus, the Targum of Unkelus says, what you alluded to, that's Ruach Mamalala, a speaking spirit that distinguishes us, that we have this intellectual capacity. It's a totally new Bria. So now, it's actually two different birthdays, two tracks. You have the track of Teva, and you have the track of Me'ala Teva. This Nishmas Chaim, this is what we could call Rachamim. And what's our goal in life? Our job is to get out of the natural world and get into the spiritual world. That's part of the reason, this is also a longer discussion, maybe for a different time, this is part of the reason that we can discuss Tumah and Tahara relating to the natural world, what things are natural, what things are unnatural, man-made, not man-made. If you ever think what things be makabel Tumah, people, vessels, all the v'kelim, ochlim, umashkim, what does it mean to be Tumah? What does it mean not to be Tumah? There's no physical distinction. There's a spiritual distinction. Well, whether are you a part of the physical or are you out of the physical? You're more in the spiritual. So there's a whole, we could spend an entire night, maybe one day, we spend just understanding this distinction between natural and above natural in the realm of Tumah. The symbolism of the mikveh going back to the original creation, the water that existed before the world. Right? This is all part of the same story of understanding that we live on two strata, trying to get above the natural world. Oh. So this is our job, is to be able to pick ourselves up from the bootstraps, from track number one, from being just animals like everybody else, and being human beings endowed with the spirit of Hashem. Now is where the Rosh Hashanah comes along. Because look at this Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah, and source number 10. Yehuda ben Nachman Pasach. Rabbi Yehuda ben Nachman opened up. This Vayikra Rabbah is one of the later collections of Midrashim, let's say the end of the Talmudic period, 5th century. Ola Elokim Besrua, Hashem Bekol Shofar. When you hear this Pasuk, this, at least for me, brings me back to the shtiebel, that's listening to the Rebbe, getting ready to say the Tzkiyas. This is the Pasuk that we're going to say when we're going to say the Tzkiyas. When do we say it? Exactly. Lam Natzeach Levnei Korach. We say this Pasuk, I think in most communities, I don't know about where everybody does, you say it seven times. Seven times. Olo Elokim Bisrua, the Lord went up with a trua. Hashem Bekol Shofar. B'shash HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yoshev Va'oleh, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sitting and going up Al Kisei Din, on the judgment throne, Badin Hu Oleh, he goes up in the throne of judgment. Matam Olo Elokim Besrua. What's the reason? Because it says Olo Elokim Besrua, and Elokim has the connotation of judgment, strictness. U'b'shash She Yisrael Nodlin Es Shofrein V'Sokin Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And at the time that the Jewish people take their shofars and blow before God, who omed mikisei hadin, he steps up from the kisei hadin, the yoshev b'kisei rachmim, and he settles into the chair of mercy. Dichsiv, as it says in the pasuk, Hashem b'kol shofar umismale aleim rachmim, and he's filled with compassion for us. Umarachim aleim, and he feels merciful for us. V'hofech aleim midas hadin l'rachmim. And he changes for us the midas hadin to the midas l'rachmim. What's the pshat in this medrash? There are two tracks on Rosh Hashanah, we said. People live in two realms. We live in Elokim and we live in Hashem. We have different times in our life. We have times in our life when we blow a tekiah. Uvahakil es hakahol tisku'u velo sariu. When the Jews were in the desert and they used to blow the chatzotzros, when they wanted to bring people together, when they were settled, when life was calm, tisku'u velo sariu, they would blow a tekiah. But what happens when life is not calm?
To what?
When life is difficult, it's bitter, it's broken.
Go war.
When there's a war,
Tua.
When there's a tannis, what do we blow? We blow a trua. What? Where does the sound of the trua come from? It's basically broken. It comes from the word ra. Actually, it also comes from the word rea in a certain sense. Like you're my rea, you're my friend because you're a piece of me just separated. So you're broke. A piece broken off of me is like my friend. But in a negative sense, when something has gone wrong, it's broken. A trua represents the times in our lives when things are broken. So that's why when the Gemara wants to know, we're not sure what a trua is. Is it 9 short blasts or is it 3 medium-sized blasts? What are those described as? They're either described in the Shvarim as genuche ganach, they're groaning, oy vey, or they're wailing, ay, 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 ay. It's genuche ganach, the Shvarim, groaning, or yulule yolal, wailing, short bursts. But that represents the broken times in our lives. When Rachman Letzlam, we feel the wrath, the tension, the strictness of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So we have, in our lives, we have tekiyas. We all start out with a neshama tohor, we start out with tekiyas. And then during our lives, unfortunately, everyone goes through, and some people more difficult than others, periods of trua. And at the end, we come back to the Ribbono Shel Olam, we're going to have a period of tekiyah. Says the Bnei Yisachar, and this is where it all comes together. The Bnei Yisachar was Rav Hirsch Melech of Dinov, who was a relative of the Munkach dynasty in the 19th century. He says, that is the pshat in this medrash. Olo Elokim Bisrua. What is Rosh Hashanah? How is it referred to in the Tanakh? Yom Trua. It's a day of judgment. When the Ribbono Shel Olam shows up, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, Alpi Kabbalah, it's called Yom Hadin HaKashya. It's the intense day of judgment, right? We have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. First day is Yom Hadin HaKashya. Strict! That's the Medrash says. Bisho Shu Yoshi Va'ole. He starts in the Kisei Din. By definition, it's called Yom Trua. It's a day when we're quaking in our boots. It's a serious day. It's a day of judgment. But what happens? We're able to shift. We shift from a trua to the shofar. The shofar, says Rav Hirsch Melech, has the connotation of the tekiya. It's not limited to the trua. The process of transforming ourselves through the shofar is what shifts the Ribbono Shel Olam from the kisei din to the kisei rachamim. It really changes us from the first level of creation, from the first beginning, to the second. We go from Elokim to Hashem. Hashem b'kol shofar. And that's what he describes here in the first paragraph in the last source. Hulufi zeh, says the Rebbe, tizbonin hatrua hamor al hadin, that trua which reflects this idea of din, hine zemavur b'torah al etzem hayom, shemaschel b'etzem din. The day of Rosh Hashanah begins as a day of din. V'hashofar v'hatkia hamor al hispashtus harachmim. Eino mavur b'feirush. Does it say anywhere in the Torah that today is going to be a day of Rachamim? No. It's only learned out in the Gemara. Remember, that was the first thing we started with. It's learned out in the Gemara that you're going to use the shofar. Because it's up to us. By us reconnecting to Hashem through the blowing of the shofar, by us raising ourselves up, so we are the ones who enable the Ribbono Shel Olam to shift from the Kisei Din to the Kisei Rachamim. What happened in that second creation? Vayipach ba'apav. He's blew something into us. What happens with the shofar? We blow the shofar. We express the same thing, so to speak, to give back to the Ribbono Shel Olam, to express to him the most basic elemental component of our being. That's our Ruach Mamalada, the spirit that he gave us. Vayitzar Hashem Elokim, through that creative process, by giving us a speaking spirit, we use that same breath as the process of the blowing of the shofar. And by doing that, we return, or we shift ourselves over, and that's what the Rebbe discusses. So if this is the pshat, then now we can understand why the shofar is really a symbol of freedom. We said that Yom Kippur of Yovel, the time is the Shiluach Avodim, We can feel to ourselves, there's nothing more free than being free from the clutches of nature. In the world of Elohim, in the world of Din, there's a lot of difficulty. In the world of Din, we're subject to the cruelty of nature. We're finite beings. But you know what happens in the world of Elohim, of Hashem Elohim, of Rachamim? We're Hayahoviyyah. There are no boundaries. There are no limits. When we're living in a world of Ruchmius, we're eternal. There's no beginning and there's no end. Just like Hayahoviyyah. So in a certain sense, on Rosh Hashanah, by going through the process of the shofar, which includes all the 10 things that Rav Sadia Gaon started with, that we mentioned, all of those things, they are the vehicles by which we internally move from just being just people to being ultimately servants of Hashem, to being people of Hashem Elohim. And perhaps that's why it can be viewed as a certain chayrus. Rav Kook explains in his introduction to the Haggadah, and with this we'll close, what's the difference between a free man and an indentured servant, a man who's a slave, or a woman for that matter. He says, look, I've seen people, and he says this on a different distinction between chametz and matzah, it's part of a longer piece. He says, I've seen people who are free, but they have the spirit of, they just seem that they're enslaved to something. And then I see people who work very hard for other people, but they carry themselves as if they are emancipated. So Rav Kook says, you know what the difference is between freedom and servitude? State of mind as it relates to yourself. Are you true to yourself? Then you're free. If you're not being true to yourself, then you're a slave. It's a very profound idea. So that means a person can be a slave because he has a master who doesn't allow him to do what he wants to do himself. Or he could be a slave because society doesn't let them be free. You know, let's say, some of you know, I'm not so good with math and science. But that's why my wife does math and science with the kids. I write the essays and she does the math and science. But let's say I went to college and the college advisor said, You got to become an accountant. You know that the best thing is to become an accountant. Everybody's becoming accountants today. Everybody's becoming accountants. Best thing is to become an accountant. I'm like, I love accountants. Don't get me wrong. Some of my good friends are accountants. But I can hardly add. I mean, I can't be an accountant. No. He says I got to. So I'm sitting there. I break my head in all these courses. So when I'm sitting in an office being an accountant somewhere, how am I going to feel? Am I going to feel like a Ben Chor? Am I going to feel like an Eved? I'm getting paid. I have my own. The answer is, I'm an Eved because society dictated to me what I'm supposed to be doing as opposed to just being true to myself. You know, you take a woman who goes to fashion school and you take her, she says, no, you can't be an artist. Society doesn't want you to be an artist. You know what we want you to be? An engineer. Huh? How about that? That's not a free person. So Rav Kook explains, Torah. Why? Because the pasuk says charos ala luchos. This is the amazing vort. With this, we're going to close. Because the luchos are engraved. What does that have to do with anything? Because when you engrave something, it becomes part and parcel. When I print or I cut and paste, it's always foreign. The Torah is not foreign to us. The reason why we are free when we study Torah, when we get in touch with our neshama, because that's who we are deep down. When we are pulled in 100 different directions, that's not really us. On Rosh Hashanah, when we hear the shofar blowing, for those few moments, we can be free to talk to God and say, you know what? I'm going to let all the other craziness of my life go. I'm just going to go back to who I really am. And that's the neshama. By doing that, I really am free. Because no one can stop me. Especially when during the shofar, it's a silent prayer. No one can make me feel awkward. Whatever I say to the Ribbono Shel Olam under my few words in my lips, no one can make me feel awkward. No one can take that away from me. I could be myself and just talk to the Almighty. By doing that, I totally transform myself. And by transforming myself, I transform my relationship with Hashem. Obviously, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't move. He doesn't move from one chair to the other chair. But vis-a-vis me, he moves. By my avod in the shofar. So whether it's blowing the shofar or listening to the shofar, by connecting to my neshama, I have moved from the Kisei, I moved the Ribbono Shel Olam, so to speak, my relationship from the Kisei Din to Kisei Rachman. And that is an amazing feeling of freedom. We're no longer shackled to the Teva that we had, to the Averus that we had. Today we can feel free to be something else. So I bless all of us that we should have a sense of Cheirus, that we cross them drawer when they ring out the Liberty Bell, which for us is the shofar, on Rosh Hashanah. We should all feel this sense of freedom, and we should merit that the Ribbono Shel Olam should give us a year of Chaim and Shalom, Bitok Rachmanis. Shekoyach. Thank you all for coming. Wish everybody a Tzivach Simetova.